Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. This is KUNM. In the past month, there's been an outpouring of sexual misconduct allegations against powerful men in Hollywood, in the media, in politics. The list of men who've been fired for their behavior is growing, including at NPR, which fired multiple high-level news executives over sexual misconduct allegations. The Me Too hashtag encouraged women to come forward with their own stories, and sexual harassment is making headlines in New Mexico as well. We've heard calls for Democratic Senator Michael Padilla to drop out of the primary race for lieutenant governor over accusations he sexually harassed women a decade ago. But we know sexual misconduct also affects people who aren't in the public eye. So this morning, we're kicking off a series of conversations about sexual harassment and assault. Have you experienced sexual harassment in your workplace? Did you feel like you could do anything about it? Have allegations against Harvey Weinstein, Garrison Keillor, or other public figures changed the way you think about this issue? Call now at 277-5866 or join us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Diane Garrity, a Santa Fe attorney who specializes in employment law and who is former general counsel to the Children, Youth, and Families Department. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
And also Debbie Dunlap joins us by phone. Debbie's the CEO of Merit Insulation, a small business in Albuquerque. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning.
Diane, what protections does New Mexico law provide against workplace sexual harassment?
There's two laws that apply and protect employees. One is the New Mexico Human Rights Act, which protects people in certain who are based on gender, disability, and gender usually includes sexual harassment and sexual harassment hostile work environment claims, which is our topic today. Mm-hmm. It also protects other categories such as disabled individuals. And our state law specifically protects the LGBTQ community as well. So there's also the EEOC, and that's called Title VII, and that's a federal law, and that usually applies to larger employers. The New Mexico Human Rights Act pretty much covers all employment situations because it's three or more people in your organization, and then that law would apply.
Okay. And you've represented multiple employees, including one high-profile case I'll mention from a few years ago, in which the head of HR at New Mexico Game and Fish accused the former head of her department, Jim Lane, of repeatedly propositioning her for sex. Can you talk about the dilemmas women face when the person harassing them is their supervisor or someone with power over their job?
Yeah, it's an incredible problem for the victim of the harassment because they're really facing a loss of their job and all of the economic consequences that and the fallout from a loss of employment. When you're making allegations about the top person in your organization, my recommendation to my clients is to have all of your evidence lined up like we did in the HR director's case. I can tell you that she had a hard time coming forward, and it wasn't until that she was in a car accident because her mind was completely absorbed on her boss hitting on her all the time that she finally decided to come forward. And even at that, we were still concerned that if we reported directly to the Game and Fish Department and their commission, that action would not be taken. So we actually prepared a 5-page letter or a 6-page letter to the governor's office so that we could make sure that the information tried to get into the proper hands.
And so by keep evidence, you mean like really take notes on every incident? Like what does that look like?
Correct. It depends. In this case, there were actually text messages from her boss propositioning her for sex. There were a number of other illegal activities that we also raised in the letter in addition to the harassment. But many times you're going to need recordings. You're going to need other employees who step up and support you. And you're going to need specific information because oftentimes, and this is what happened in the investigation in this case, is they try to turn it on the employee and try to say that the employee was asking for it. the HR director happened to be a very beautiful woman, and there were comments made along the lines, well, from the men, like, well, what are we supposed to do? She's so beautiful. And then when you go through the process of mediation, then the person who is the victim of the harassment then gets to be confronted, well, you know, look how beautiful you are. What did you expect? And so there's all of those kinds of barriers that you really have to tell the person to anticipate and to be strong enough to get into a good counseling program and have good family supports so that they can go through basically a re-victimization sometimes.
I think it's really telling that in this particular case, you felt you had to go up to as far as a letter to the governor to get, the attention that it deserved. And a recent poll found that a majority of American women have experienced inappropriate advances from male colleagues. And nearly all of them, I think 95%, said their harasser went unpunished. So obviously something's not working in the system, right? Whether it's the workplace culture or policies or the HR department in place, something along the line discourages reporting. So what can someone do if they've reported or if they want to report and they feel like they're not believed or nothing's changing?
Well, the employers have some obligations, usually under their policies, if they want to create a good environment for work for their workers, for their employees. And one of those is to take what's called prompt remedial action. Take a look at the situation that's complained about and make some initial decisions about whether or not the harasser needs to be removed from the workplace so that other victims can either step forward and there can be an impartial and independent investigation. In the case that we were talking about, the HR director actually went on family medical leave during the investigation because of just the stress from the workplace. And it came back to us, you know, through the grapevine that we were right to go to the governor's office and to start there because the came back to us that the Game and Fish Commission actually wanted to fight the charges and fight the allegations. And it wasn't until somebody brought to their attention all of the evidence, information that we had to prove the accusations that the commissioner was then asked to resign.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about sexual harassment and abuse today. You can call 277-5866 or 1-877-899-5866. Diane Garrity, attorney from Santa Fe here. What should that internal investigation look like if it's going to be effective?
Well, it really depends on, you know, sort of what the employer has set up in their policies. But in order to be effective, you really need an investigator who is trained in harassment issues and what to look for, how to ask questions. The EEOC has actually issued a number of regulations or guidelines to help people.
Sorry, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the federal commission.
Right. And they've issued some regulations that help guide investigators through the process and what to look for, how to interview people, how to ask open-ended questions. What do you do when you have a he said, she said? How do you break that tie and actually, you know, issue a conclusion to what's happened? And then from that, what the employer should do when they initially get a complaint is to determine, you know, should somebody be removed from the workforce so that they aren't subjected to additional harassment? And then they need to do an impartial investigation that is, you know, that's prompt, you know, not 30 days until somebody is assigned to do it or they find somebody, but right away. And so employers really need to have, you know, their HR departments or individual employers really need to have some resources available to them in the event that they're confronted with these kinds of allegations in the workplace. Because the longer you let these complaints fester, the worse they get and the more corrupt the workplace becomes.
A lot of the recent high-profile national allegations of sexual misconduct involve women in high-profile industries, but some women who have little to no power over their workplace environment have other considerations as well, like when there's more at stake than just another job or when companies don't even have harassment policies in place. We'll expand our conversation even more next week on part two of our Let's Talk New Mexico series here on KUNM. Today, we're going to hear from a woman who's been able to create her own ideal working environment. Debbie Dunlap is on the line, CEO of Merit Insulation. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning.
Debbie, you've been in the construction industry for 40 years, but you took over as CEO of Merit Insulation after your husband passed away 7 years ago. Can you talk about some of the specific changes you wanted to make in that workplace culture when you came in as the boss?
Well, of course, it is a male-dominated industry, and we're well aware that there's a wide spectrum of events that happen, and we don't tolerate that. But that being said, our office is mainly, the office part is mainly women, and I try to create an atmosphere where they feel safe, secure, and open to telling things that might occur. Fortunately, we have never had any incidents in the last 7 years that have really affected any of my ladies in the office, and we have a great working environment and great culture.
What would be your sort of bar for writing someone up or firing them for misconduct? I mean, what kinds of behaviors do you openly communicate that, hey, we're not tolerating this?
Well, not only sexual harassment, but, you know, verbal harassment, discriminatory remarks. Mm-hmm. Of course, any type of display of sexual organs.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we just have never had anything, so I'm just really fortunate.
Mm-hmm. But you experienced some experiences of harassment and or discrimination in your time as a lobbyist, you said, and also your time in the construction industry. Talk about your attitude in overcoming those.
Well, I just myself will not tolerate anyone treating me the way that I think I deserve, you know, I think I deserve to be treated well, and that's what I act like, and that's what I portray, and that's what I do.
Debbie, you've also been on a number of boards here in town, and we know, you know, sexual harassment isn't really always about sex, you know, it's about power. What is that like when it's flipped and you feel just as empowered maybe as some of the men in the room? And what's it been like to be on those all-male boards and sort of be have a seat at that table?
It's been wonderful and enlightening, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. You mentioned, you know, I have been the chair or president of several boards in town and have served as the only woman and have never felt like I was inferior or that I needed to succumb to any of the men in the room.
Well, you know, women still make up a small percentage of CEOs in this country, so the leadership change is still, you know, up to men in many cases. What advice do you have for male CEOs and how to ensure that their female employees feel safe and empowered?
I think respect is the main thing. You need to respect them.
All right. Debbie Dunlap, CEO of Merit Insulation, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We are going to go to a break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Call 277-5866 if you want to join in to the show today. We'll go to a break now.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Today's day sponsor is Alfred Mathewson of Albuquerque, congratulating Pamela Herndon on her 6th anniversary as executive director of Southwest Women's Law Center.
You are my soul, you are my heart. Robert Schumann wrote this song as a wedding present for his wife, Clara, to show his love, but also to show they wouldn't be starving artists, that he could write something people would like. Lise de la Salle plays Robert Schumann's gift to Clara on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, sexual harassment in the workplace. If you've experienced sexual harassment or abuse, how did it affect your mental health or your ability to do your job? Were you able to report it to HR or law enforcement? What consequences would you like to see for people who've harassed or abused others? And should different types of misconduct result in different consequences? On the line now, we have Republican State Representative Kelly Fajardo. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Representative Fajardo, last week you wrote a strongly worded letter to New Mexico's legislative leadership calling for an end to sexual harassment at the Roundhouse. Now, multiple women have confided in you that they don't feel safe there in the legislature. What does harassment at the Roundhouse look like?
It's a loaded question. The things that I'm addressing are things involving, getting legislation through, bills through in exchange for sexual favors, in exchange for, being together alone in a room, things like that. The things I point out are very egregious and very poignant. And so, and those are the things that I'm trying to bring up and get a conversation started about.
And how does the legislature's current no harassment policy fall short of protecting women there?
That's a great question. I would say there it basically doesn't. One of the things that during a regular session, the Roundhouse expands tremendously as far as the number of people that are there. And I call them stakeholders. I haven't found a better name. If anybody has one, please share it. But, they're not just staff. We have lobbyists up there. We have activists up there. We have media up there. We have people who are industry insiders trying to, get legislation through or prevent legislation, from having their bills heard. I mean, it's just, there are people who are interested in policy and politics and what is good for New Mexico. And so when you look at the current policy, it only applies to staff only. It doesn't apply to everybody else that's up there. It doesn't apply to all the stakeholders. And then within it, you're supposed to report to the chairman or to ledge counsel, or which are appointed or hired by the majority leadership.
Hmm.
So there's no outside review. There's no independent source to go to. And to report would be political suicide if you're a lobbyist or a stakeholder. And so there's nothing there, no place for people to go to.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Should we hold publicly elected officials to a higher standard than, say, a CEO of a private company? That's a question for listeners. If you're tuned in, you can call 277-5866 to join the conversation. We're also on Twitter. Use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. Kelly Fajardo, State Representative. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Peter Wirth has now said lawmakers will be required to go through sexual harassment training before the 2018 session. A new study by the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission found that most of the trainings implemented in the last 30 years have not worked to prevent sexual misconduct. So if the trainings we've had so far are not particularly effective, what measures specifically do you want to see, Representative Fajardo?
So I want to see something enacted that has to deal with the reporting side of it, and I agree. And I think as women, we kind of see that a lot of the training, it's just it doesn't apply to me, or I can get away with it attitude is probably the biggest problem. I want to see a reporting mechanism where everything goes to an independent counsel and these things are dealt with. Training is part of it, but it's just only a small part of the problem. And, and I wasn't aware that of your study that showed it doesn't affect anything. So, so then where do we go from here? If training doesn't work, what are we going to do? And I also I've been very vocal about this. I also want to make it very clear too, to your listening audience. It's probably 10% of the people causing 90% of the problems. This isn't a huge epidemic. It's not widespread, but it is a problem that needs to be dealt with. And so we need to make sure that whatever we do deals with the problems, but we also don't go on a witch hunt. that we don't go after people who, you know, are using this as a political football. And I've been very, very candid and very open about that, that we have real problems, and let's make sure that we address the problems and not start using this as a tool to go after each other.
If you've experienced sexual harassment or abuse, how did it affect your mental health and your ability to do your job? Were you able to report it in your workplace? Call us now. We want to hear from you. 277-5866. Now, we are seeing some response. Democratic Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham, who's running for governor, has called for Senator Michael Padilla to end his bid for lieutenant governor due to allegations about his misconduct over a decade ago. And your colleague, Representative Sarah Maestas Barnes, announced she's pushing to extend the statute of limitations for sexual assault. Representative Fajardo, do you think this cultural moment will translate to real change at the state level?
I hope so. I mean, I hope so. You know, I've had a lot of conversations and I've done a lot of interviews lately. And, you know, one of the, questions I get is why now? Why now? And I'm very honest and candid. Well, would you have listened a year ago? And I don't think they would. And it's, you know,
what do you think has changed since a year ago?
I'm sorry?
What do you think has changed since a year ago?
I think that people are listening, you know, and I think it's, you know, the Harvey Weinsteins and the, you know, the Matt Lauers and everything that we're hearing on the media, and, you know, it's just, you know, and is the media hungry for it? Are they looking for sound bites? I don't know, but I think people are starting to pick up on it. And I think women are feeling more empowered to tell their stories. I think women are more empowered to report the stories. I think we still have a long way to go in the majority of the cases, but more and more women are coming forward, which is a huge, huge step. I don't think anybody would have listened a year ago.
What would your advice be to anyone in the roundhouse this upcoming session, or any time who experiences this type of harassment or assaults, you know, in the meanwhile, before we really see any big changes?
God, that's a great question. I don't think I have an answer for it. You know, it's just we have to come up with some solutions, you know, to deal with this. You know, I read a great article yesterday from the New York Times, and it talked about unintended consequences of things like this. And, you know, we all know that women are, you know, cracking that glass ceiling. You know, we have women who are CEOs. We have women who are, you know, are in charge of Fortune 500 companies. You know, they're senators and governors and, you know, running for president and all these great, wonderful things. And we have worked hard to get a seat at the table. We have struggled to have a seat at the table. And if we're not careful, the men are going to be scared to have us at the table. And we will have almost ruined everything that we work so hard for. And so we have to be very, very careful that we go after the bad guys, but we don't use this as a tactic just to create problems. Because I'm already hearing stories, and you hear it in some of the blogs, that men are going, oh, no, sorry, can't meet with you because I might get reported. And we all know that in a career, you need personal relationships to move forward. You need that interaction. And so if we start creating an environment where we women, as women, we can't have a decent conversation, then we're going to start losing that seat at the table. And so, you know, we have to be very cognizant of how we move forward on this.
And I do want to get to that idea of the backlash against this movement and these public allegations later in the hour. And I also do want to add here that unreported sexual harassment and assault is statistically a much bigger problem than false allegations. I appreciate those comments so much. Representative Kelly Fajardo, thanks for your work on this, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go to a listener now. Cynthia in Albuquerque is on the line. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi.
What's your comment?
My comment, I was, I guess I'll just say briefly, I was enraged after listening to a woman, last name Dunlap, talk about no problems in her company. And she just stands up and demands respect and gets it from men. Well, I don't know her history, but my history is being sexually assaulted by the principal when I was 5 years old for a year. And I found out when I was 18, the man finally went to prison. I had no voice then, and I have had multiple problems with assault and inappropriate touching and from men where I work. I'm an engineer, and I finally left the field in my 50s and became a nurse, hoping I could work just with women. And I was so tired of working with men, not supported. My last position was with the city of Albuquerque, and there was an engineer that kept touching me and grabbing me, and everyone knew it. I would blockade my cubicle, build it up with fans and different things, so he couldn't come into my cubicle and grab me unexpectedly. And everyone knew it. They would laugh about my barricades. But it wasn't until I started arguing with him about his touching me that he tried to get me fired. And I walked in and I explained my situation, and he was removed from his job that very next day. He wasn't there. And when I finally quit my job to go and be a nurse, because I was so tired of this, that I heard he had gotten rehired at the city afterwards. I mean, it's what I take offense at, what Dunlap said, is for those of us who have been assaulted throughout our childhood and we don't have a voice. I am paralyzed by men. Men paralyze me with fear, and that's just how it is. And I'm a strong, intelligent woman. I'm a very large woman. I thought I had a lot of power, but I've been powerless. And I can't explain it, but to imagine that a lot of people don't report assaults is because we lost our voices as small children. And
Cynthia,
for me, I left the engineering field because of it, because I couldn't get protected.
Cynthia, I really appreciate you being brave enough to share that story today. What do you wish had been different about the way your company had handled things at that time? What could they have done?
You know what would have been nice is if people listening would understand that when they see a person being mistreated, don't assume that she's an adult. She should report her own problems. She may actually have been so psychologically damaged that if you see that, maybe I wish some of the men that I had worked with had gone to this particular man or gone to my boss and said, you know what? I don't like what I'm seeing.
Cynthia.
Just like you, I mean, just like when you see a bully picking on somebody who, you know, is timid or not mentally incapacitated, you know, just like, because it is true. There is I'm a very intelligent person, but there are areas in my body that cannot handle certain things because of my trauma.
Cynthia, thank you so much for sharing. We're going to go to another caller now. We have a caller from Santa Fe who'd like to remain anonymous. You're on the show. Caller from Santa Fe, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What is your, what would you like to share today?
So I want to share that I'm really glad this show is taking place, and I'm really somewhat, you know, pleased that the nation is finally coming to grips with what's been taking place in terms of another injustice against women, and I'm sure men suffer it too, but for the most part, it's prevalent with women. And I'm calling because your question was about the impacts on health. And so I am, you know, currently going through a sexual harassment issue in my workplace. And it has been really hard on me mentally and physically. Part of the mental part of it is that when I reported, I was not taken seriously. And when I reported, the person that I reported on said that I was lying. And so, you know, when that happens to an individual, their legitimacy as a person, you know, is immediately affected and impacted. And then, you know, one of the dynamics of sexual harassment is that, you know, it comes down to a power and control issue. And so for me, what's been particularly heinous about this situation is that the person that's harassing me has a higher position than me. And but I have like a higher education and higher experience. But because this other person has higher power in the institution, he's really been allowed to treat me in such a way. And so not only have I suffered from the sexual harassment, but the retaliation the retaliation factor for me has been tremendously high of what I'm going through. And so that means that there's a lot of tactics that he uses that are, you know, pretty subtle, but they're very clearly intended to discredit me, to harm me, to show that, you know, I'm a lesser worker. So there's all of these things that go along with the harassment. And I think, you know, it has impacted me. Like I said, it's really made me think about, you know, how I've worked so hard as a woman to become well-educated and experienced. And yet you have, you know, men in positions of power who haven't necessarily gone the same route to achieve their goals, but they've been awarded because they're men. They've been awarded with positions of power. And so so for me, it's been blatant.
You know, and thank you so much for sharing that. I know it's not an easy thing to talk about. I want to ask, what are you doing to take care of yourself?
So so I am doing a variety of things. You know, I have counselors. I have a counselor that I'm working with, and I have a really strong network of women who support me and know me. But conversely, there's a strong network of folks who don't support me, who think that I'm the troublemaker. Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate that the person who's actually causing the problem is really, you know, his presence in the problem is really subdued because so many people are questioning me more than him. And so, but back to your question I've always been a deeply spiritual person. And so I go back to that. But I do have a strong network of strong women. And I believe that, I've been advocating for myself. I've not been standing by to let this happen. I've been vocal about it, which hasn't been easy. That too has been taking a toll on me. My physical health has worsened. I do have high blood pressure now and a lot of stress-related issues going on. But I wanted, because one of the things about my situation is that I am Native American, and Native American and African American women report, you know, the highest rates of sexual harassment. And yet, you know, in the national conversation, we're really not seeing those voices as much, but we need to. And so on behalf of Native American women who are struggling with this, you know, I support you, and I strongly urge you to come forth, because, you know, Representative Fajardo is talking about people are listening, but more importantly, people are believing.
Mm-hmm.
People are believing.
Thank you so much. We're going to get to our next guest. I really appreciate you bringing that perspective up and for sharing your story. That was a caller from Santa Fe. What consequences would you like to see for people who've harassed or abused others? And should different types of misconduct result in different consequences? We want to hear from you. Call us at 277-5866 now. You can also email us, letstalknm@kunm.org. An overwhelming majority of sex offenders and harassers are men, according to some analyses of federal data. While we often think of men victimizing women, we know that LGBTQ people are also often targeted. Most LGBTQ Americans report they've experienced violence or harassment based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. We have in the studio Frankie Flores, education coordinator at the UNM LGBTQ Resource Center. Thanks for being here, Frankie.
Thank you for having me.
How is sexual harassment on campus or in the workplace affecting the folks who reach out to you?
Yeah, so we're in an interesting place right now at UNM. We were recently under a DOJ and Department of Justice investigation, and we've taken some really strong steps to make sure that we are in compliance with the Department of Justice. And so one of the most exciting things that we've done is we've created confidential reporting sites. So the LGBTQ Resource Center, also the Women's Resource Center and Lobo Respect Advocacy Center are places that individuals can go to and report sexual harassment or ask questions. And we don't have to actually report to the Office of Equal Opportunity. So we can help individuals just get help, you know, we've taken people to go to SANE, Albuquerque SANE, the Rape Crisis Center, just receive some of those things without having to report, because we know that LGBTQ individuals have an increased fear about reporting, and there are a lot of other barriers to reporting for LGBTQ individuals as well.
We need to go to a quick break. Keep those calls and comments coming via Facebook, Twitter, or by calling 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.
KUNM is really thankful for all of the wonderful people throughout New Mexico and in other states who have donated their car or truck to us this year. We have been able to avoid adding a third week of on-air fundraising, largely thanks to you. It's a painless way to support KUNM, and your unwanted vehicle may be worth more as a tax deduction than as a trade. See if yours qualifies. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Since 2011, the Snake Oil Salesmen have blended rock and folk with a touch of twang. This month, we'll feature their new album, Dead and Breathing, which sounds like this.
It was hard to put your things away. The pain and hurt.
We hope you'll join us for the next Native America Calling.
Just some clothes.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about the Me Too movement and addressing sexual harassment in the workplace. Join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866. An email comment came in from Steve, who writes that politicians and media stars are getting called out on harassment, which is good, but it's a distraction. He says the discussion has to include restaurant workers, hotel workers, and all low-paid female workers. We are actually going to be talking about this issue exactly on the show next week. We're in the studio here with Frankie Flores, Education Coordinator at UNM LGBTQ Resource Center. Frankie, what are the unique challenges when it comes to harassment and abuse in transgender communities?
Yeah, so our transgender community is probably our most vulnerable community. And when we're looking at our trans community, we also have to think about the intersections of identities. You know, if you are a trans undocumented woman, the likelihood of assault is extremely high, and the likelihood of reporting is very low. You know, if you report, are you going to be deported? If you report, is anyone going to believe you? And there's also this notion that all trans women are sex workers. And so we believe that all trans women deserve it, because we have this really disgusting belief in our society that sex workers are open to any and all sexual advances, when that is absolutely not true. And so we have to make sure that we are really supporting and advocating for our transgender community, especially for our transgender women of color. You know, just on November 20th, we had the Transgender Day of Remembrance, and we had 325 names of individuals who were killed due to violence. These individuals were killed because they were walking down the street. A lot of these individuals were killed in sex-related crimes as well. And so some statistics from actually the U.S. Transgender Survey these are New Mexico specific. 23% of trans students face sexual assault in school ages K through 12. 4% of transgender people were sexually assaulted in bathrooms. There's been this whole conversation, right, about bathrooms and trans people are going to be assaulting individuals. There is no statistic evidence that actually supports that, but there is evidence that supports that trans people are being assaulted in bathrooms. So our trans community faces fear. They face discrimination. They also face the fear they're not always out. So if they come out as trans in the workplace, what is going to happen to them?
Talk about the dynamics that exist in the gay community that you hear about.
Yeah. So specifically within the LGB, lesbian, gay, bisexual community, there are some extreme challenges. First of all, if you're going to report sexual harassment, you are outing yourself. And if we're talking about, you know, university specifically, you may not be out to everybody. You know, if you got sexually assaulted at a gay nightclub or a gay bar and you have to tell somebody that, then you're coming out. And do I know if I'm coming out to you that you're going to treat me the same? Do I know that I'm going to receive actual justice, or is this going to be ignored? Also, there is this fear, or this idea rather, that we as lesbian, gay, bisexual individuals, we are expected to go through sexual assault. You know, especially with young gay men, it's almost seen as this rite of passage, I would say. And, you know, I came out in the early 90s. I came out really young. And I was sexually assaulted. I don't even know how many times. And part of it was I felt I deserved it because it was just part of being gay. And that mentality, I think, still exists today. And so we have so many individuals who don't even know what sexual assault is. Also, when we're experiencing it from family members as well, and we're not speaking up because we, you know, especially as Latino individuals, we have this idea that we don't speak against the family, right? Mm. And so all of these layers of intersection, or all these intersections rather, play out in our identities all the time and really affect how we choose to come out, how we choose to report.
Thank you for that. Another story came in via email from Byron. He said his daughter was a young worker when she was being sexually harassed by her employer. She filed a complaint with the EEOC on her own, and 3 or 4 years later, a settlement was reached. She managed to make that happen as a teenager. To listeners, if you're a man, what are you doing to call out harassment and abuse when you see it? Mm-hmm. If you're a boss or HR professional, what are you doing to make your workplace safer? Call us now, 277-5866. I want to be clear that this all didn't just begin this fall. The origin of the Me Too movement that touched off this recent flood of accusations and firings goes back more than a decade. Me Too was a campaign started by a black woman named Tarana Burke, who founded a nonprofit to support victims of sexual harassment and assault, particularly young women and girls of color. It's important to acknowledge that women of color who experience sexual abuse, as well as populations like immigrants and incarcerated women, often have less access to resources and get far less media attention than more privileged women. And we're also going to spend more time in our series looking at those issues in depth on next week's show. I want to welcome our next guest, but first let's go to a listener, Kim in Albuquerque. What is your comment?
Hello.
Hi. What did you want to say, Kim?
Well, I would like to emphasize that lessons that women are the victims of sexual harassment and assault are responsible for their own victimization begin really early. And I wanted to relate the story of my daughter, who, as a freshman at Albuquerque High, one of her teachers told her that she looked like a hooker. That teacher also told two other young girls that they looked like hookers. When we complained to the principal and the vice principal, and we had multiple meetings with different administrators and the teacher, the message that was consistently relayed was that women had to be careful with what they wore because it could incite violence in men. And this was a disastrous experience for me, my daughter, our whole family.
Kim, thank you so much for that comment. I want to welcome Victor Lacherva to the conversation. He's president of the nonprofit New Mexico Men's Wellness and a retired public health physician. Victor, thanks for being here.
Sure, my pleasure.
You've been working on violence prevention for decades. Why do you think this conversation is really catching on now and not 10 plus years ago when Tarana Burke and others were already working on these issues?
I'm not sure I have the answer to that. I do know that the hopeful news is that there has been this progression. In the 60s, we started talking about child abuse. In the 70s, domestic violence. In the 80s, child sexual assault. In the 90s, date rape. And this conversation, as you pointed out, started in the 2000s. Why it's gaining more attention now, I don't really have an answer for, but I do think it is part of the progression of defining what is unacceptable in our society, and that's the good news.
I want to go to a caller from Santa Fe. You're on the line, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. I agree. It is unacceptable, and I'm glad that everything is coming to light finally after all these centuries that women are finally being heard. I do think sometimes the pendulum has swung a little further where there are accusations or, you know, the he said, she said situations where sometimes the men are almost always pictured as villains. And I think it's kind of a, just being human, that sometimes both parties can be somewhat at fault or there can be a problem with both parties involved. I'm a feminist myself, and I'm proud to be, and I'm thank goodness that things are changing and women are finally being heard. But I just think sometimes the men are almost always pictured as villains, and it just isn't always so.
Victor Lacherva of New Mexico Men's Wellness, how do you respond or talk to men about that kind of comment?
Well, it's a comment that comes up often, and I think the first step is to be allies for the women who are coming forth as victims, that we need to acknowledge their suffering and we need to be believing them as the first step. Then we need to start to hold people accountable as well. And the issue of false accusations comes up in domestic violence and child abuse, not only in terms of sexual harassment. And it's something that we need to pay attention to. There's no easy answer with it, but we have to be able to have that conversation because sometimes that is the reality. But as you pointed out earlier in the show, the number of false accusations pale in significance in terms of the overall numbers of people who have been victimized and are finding the courage to come forth and speak.
I think part of the sort of pushback that we're seeing against a movement like Me Too is men saying, oh, well, now are we in danger of being accused just for looking at someone or talking to her? I mean, how do you talk to men who come to your support groups about the distinction between appropriate and inappropriate types of behavior?
Well, first of all, the groups that we have are not sort of guru on the stage or someone having all the wisdom and sharing it. It's mm-hmm. really about creating a safe space where men can talk about what's really going on in their lives. And issues of sex and intimacy are important aspects that men deal with all the time. So primarily what New Mexico Men's Wellness does through 7 events a year, one of which is a male-female dialogue day, where we kind of really try and settle into listening to each other, is to provide a space where those kinds of conversations can happen. So one of the issues that I think comes up, for example, if I were to say to you, Hannah, you look lovely today, how does that feel? Is that flirting? Is that being friendly? And those kinds of lines, clearly, the stuff we've been talking about earlier in the show in terms of inappropriate touching, repeated advances towards someone, those are unacceptable behaviors. But I want to shift the conversation, which I haven't heard much of, to talking about the kinds of conditioning that most men get, and particularly when a woman is in a position of being a checkout person or a cashier or a waitress. Where is that line? Where is that boundary? How do we educate men to begin to find a healthy boundary in terms of remarks like that? Am I just being friendly? Am I flirting? If I'm flirting, am I paying attention to the fact that that flirting is not welcome by the feedback that you're giving me, by not engaging, by your body language? Men in this society get a tremendously negative set of conditioning around their maleness, their emotional fluency.
The sort of be a man idea.
Yeah, all of that, anything you want to put in that box. And some of that certainly relates to this conversation in a big way.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to this idea of power in the workplace. Researchers have actually found organizations that are particularly prone to sexual misconduct are generally 1, male-dominated, 2, very hierarchical, and 3, have leadership that tends to be forgiving of bad behavior. So how do we get men to think about those power structures and even challenge them if they also benefit from?
Well, I think there's 2 ways that come to mind. First of all, until the average Joe connects degrading comments, degrading behaviors, objectification of women, until they connect the dots between that and the possibility that their daughter or their sister or their mom is going to get raped, that they won't become part of the solution. They've got to make that connection, that the sort of locker room talk that happens that's accepted, the derogatory jokes against women, that when that's occurring and someone is not speaking out against it, then we are part of the problem, not part of the solution, which brings up the whole issue that I think Cynthia brought up when one of your callers, and that is the bystander. How do we educate mm-hmm. men to be allies, men and women, to be allies and empower them as bystanders to be part of the solution? So if you're working in that kind of a work environment or a corporate environment that you described, we need to empower the men in that environment, who are good men, to feel that they have a voice in terms of speaking out against this kind of behavior.
What tools do you recommend to men who say, well, I don't know what to say? Like, what kinds of phrases or responses would you sort of coach?
Well, some of the simple coaching is, you know, I feel uncomfortable with that remark, or that remark's not okay for me. I think that really what one of the big benefits that I've seen about this explosion of media coverage has been that more people are having conversations around the dinner table. We actually made it a topic of one of our men's groups a couple of weeks ago at our own men's group. And we were talking about in our younger days the errors of our ways because we were not sensitive or as sensitive as we are now.
That reflection is really important. Thank you. One more question before we have to end the hour. I wanted to put this to Diane Garrity. Do you think this movement, this Me Too, this cultural moment will have a lasting effect? And what needs to change?
Well, I hope that it does have a lasting effect because it needs to have a lasting effect. Equal means equal in my mind. And if we're going to have, since we do have, you know, more than 50% of the women in the workplace, there has to be an equalization of power, and there has to be an equalization of allowing people, all people, to step forward and say, you know what, how you're treating me is not okay. And I really agree with what Victor said, that other people need to step up and support the person who is the victim and not merely try to just sweep it away and say, we don't want that because it's going to cause trouble in our workplace. So I hope that there is a community of effort to really address this problem.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much to our guests, Diane Garrity of Sarah and Garrity Law Firm in Santa Fe, Republican State Representative Kelly Fajardo, Debbie Dunlap of Merritt Insulation, Frankie Flores of the UNM LGBTQ Resource Center, and Victor Lacherva of New Mexico Men's Wellness. Thank you to everyone who shared their stories or thoughts. You can find a list of resources for sexual harassment and assault survivors on our webpage. We recognize there's more to this conversation. Next week on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll go beyond the headlines and talk about what it's like for folks who don't have an HR department to turn to when they experience sexual harassment or abuse, like migrant workers and women getting out of jail or prison. Reach out to share your story. Let's Talk NM at KUNM.org. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Marisa DeMarco was our producer. Sarah Trujillo live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and she screened your calls with assistance today from Victor Onimole. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.